Talk given on Sunday, 1st August 1971. We all turn, not unnaturally, to religion, and we take to disciplines in order to solve our problems, our difficulties, to console ourselves or to assuage our sorrows, get some clarity with regard to truth or God or the transcendent, and so free ourselves from the pain of the confusion and the conflict in our minds. It might come as a shock to most people to be told that the religious life, the holy life, in actual fact begins with saintliness. Saintliness is not the culmination of the holy life. It begins in those who are free of the ordinary turmoil and problems with which we are afflicted. The context of religion is the transcendent. It is not this world. When we have some degree of poise and stability in ourselves, some power for establishing freedom in our own minds, and therefore also in our own actions, to an extent sufficient to deal adequately, which means to respond rightly to all the challenges that life presents us. When we are like that, then we can truly begin to live the holy life, the religious life in the grand sense of the term. Now this immediately makes one feel, oh, but then obviously religion in this sense is not intended for me. I am in difficulty, I am in sorrow, I have problems, I don't know what to do, I am afflicted, you have nothing for me. On the face of it, nothing indeed. On the face of it, one can speak harshly and say, sink or swim. And yet, consider deeply. That which is the worldly, that which belongs to this realm of the limited and the particular, in which this world, in which there is beginning, proceeding and ending. This world is an appearance of a reality. I am talking deliberately in dualistic terms, because the reality is only one total reality. It does not exclude this world. This world, in the sense of the whole factual world, is the one and only reality. The separation lies deep within one's own awareness, the mode in which one is aware of the world. It is I who separate out this world from that world. the worldly from the transcendent, and so forth. In actual fact, there is only one reality. And this world, as it appears to me, because I am conscious in this particular way, this world appears to be different from that world. So there is the sort of basic duality, and hence the basic conflicts which arise from it. But if one does realize transcendence, what we here as we are may justifiably call transcendence, then we see the world as one whole world. Now, what we call the religious disciplines have as their objective, if I may talk in those terms of an objective to attain, something desirable, have as their objective this realization of transcendence. Transcendence which I, because I am imperfect and not clear seeing, transcendence which I place out there instead of here, which I believe I see and touch and deal with and so forth. That transcendence is seen right here in all this, absolutely permeating it through and through. There is no separation whatsoever in actual fact. It is I who am the separator. And any religious discipline I take to has for its objective this restoration of the wholeness in my own awareness, which means I, the split person, the sick person, have to become the one whole integrated being. Now, this becoming the one whole integrated being is not a process of putting the bits and bobs together. It is not that. Each one of us starts off with this divine potentiality of awakening and growing into the one whole integrated being. It is a case of waking up and growing into the wholeness. If therefore we take to disciplines which we regard as means, as techniques, which will produce this kind of result, we are always going to be in difficulties. Notice how easily, after a time, when we have practiced this, that, or the other discipline, we suddenly say to ourselves, oh, well, I've done this over and over again and nothing happens. They all say that such and such wonderful results will come, but there is nothing to it. I thought a month ago that at last I had attained control over myself, I was going to be at peace and poised and all the rest forevermore. And now suddenly this wretched problem has come and I'm absolutely upset and annoyed and angry and perturbed and all the rest of it. In fact, I'm not even standing on my head, which probably might give me a better view of the world as it is than standing on my feet. So when this comes up, it is very upsetting. One immediately questions, is there any value in all this pious talk, this religious stuff? Or is it all? As one person who is considered very clever said, opiate, the opiate of the people. If there is something wrong with my sense of hearing, why should I blame the bird or the singer or the orchestra? Isn't it better to look to my sense of hearing and see if I, perhaps with the aid of somebody else, can heal it, can restore it? This realization of transcendence means that this split person is restored to his wholeness. We are born with this potentiality in us. Now, all of you have heard the word mindfulness again and again, of becoming aware. And all of us have in some form or other, at some time or other, practiced some discipline or other in which mindfulness plays an important part. And we say that we observe the external situation, we observe all our reactions, and we try to be calm and quiet, and well, we just keep on observing and nothing happens. Now, are we sure that we are observing correctly? Is it true mindfulness? Am I being really mindful? Or am I under some delusion with respect to the nature of my mindfulness? Let us look into this, because this is of fundamental importance. It is really the golden key. If you get hold of it, supposing the situation at 10 o'clock is one which makes me very angry. I am a person who practices mindfulness. So I mindfully observe the factors at play which make me angry. I mindfully observe the reactions which spring up in my own mind against the situation which I term anger. Now, after a time, that anger will inevitably subside, because no storm anywhere in the universe lasts forever. It comes, it goes. But this is not what we are seeking in terms of the discipline. We want to realize the capacity for perpetual peace. Not a temporary peace, which comes inevitably by virtue of the nature of the phenomenal world. Storm, calm. Dark, light, and so forth. After a time, Again, some situation arises, and I find anger bubbling up in me. All right, this is the second time. Then the third time, and so on to the 300th time. And then I feel my patience is getting exhausted. 300 times I've tried, nothing happens. It's the same story over and over again. And I say, but I have practiced the mindfulness. I've looked into my inner condition, seen that this is anger, that I am angry, or this is anger. And nothing happens. Now, consider very carefully. When I am conscious of this anger inside, and I say that I am looking at the anger, what exactly am I looking at? We can define it this way, that the mind in a certain state of upheaval, of distress, and so forth, that state of the mind is named anger. Now I know that as a definition in so many words. When this living organism reacts in this unpleasant way, this conscious person, the conscious subject, looks inside at this state, or imagines that he is really seeing that state, and says, ah, this is anger. Now what exactly am I looking at? The actual state of my mind, or at the word anger? This is the key. I am not looking at the actual state of the mind as it is. I am not looking at what actually is there. Is the dis-ease, the distress of the mind. I am looking at the label of that distress. Just as a doctor will diagnose something and say, oh, you've got arthritis or whatever it may be. Now, your doctor does not prescribe for the name arthritis. He prescribes for the actual physical condition of arthritis. I think I didn't choose a very good one. Arthritis is almost incurable. However, you understand what I mean. Let me put it in another form. We'll take another analogy, which we dealt with yesterday at the meeting. Supposing I'm sharpening a pencil and I cut my finger. Now, the words which I use are just these. My finger is bleeding. But it happens that where the body is concerned, I can see the bleeding finger. I can take whatever is necessary to deal with that bleeding finger and deal with the finger which is bleeding and not with the words bleeding finger. The label. If I were to look at my bleeding finger and just try to deal with the words bleeding finger, all I shall do is to enter into a disquisition, an essay on the subject bleeding finger. Lots of words will follow, but the finger will continue to bleed. It won't get healed. Now you see, this is our difficulty with respect to the mind. I can see the bleeding finger and I can deal with it physically. I can touch it. I can do something in relation to it. But when the psyche gets into this wounded state, this hurt state. This actual condition of the psyche I don't see. I only see the name, the word. And that is what I'm trying to deal with. Do you get the point? Because if you can get hold of this point, then the way is open for the realization of wholeness, of health. Otherwise it is not. Our disciplines which we practice in order to heal ourselves do not take effect for the very simple reason that we are dealing only with the labels attached to our psychical conditions. Let us go a little more deeply into it. Supposing, as before, I said I'm angry, and I use the word anger. When I use the word anger, I have my own definitions of that word. The definitions are other words in place of anger. Or they may be whole sentences, descriptive of the meaning of this one word, anger. But they are all words. And they have come into being because of my actual experience in life and because of communicating with other people who use language. Right from childhood, somebody says, oh, you've got angry now. And I know the condition in which I am, boiling with rage inside. This is a phrase for anger, boiling with rage, you see. I know, I'm experiencing the actual feeling, and this fellow keeps on saying, you are angry, angry. So I associate the word angry, or the word anger, with this kind of condition which I experienced. So you see, when I look within myself, when I am grown up, and say, this is anger, I am looking at my definitions of anger. What I am recognizing as present in the actual moment is a picture of anger and not the actual state of my own psyche. It's very difficult to get hold of this. But this is what we have to get hold of. No one else can get hold of it for us. Whereas with the physical body, supposing you fall and twist your ankle or a bone gets bent or something, a doctor can catch hold of the part of your body and do something with it. But there is no doctor who can catch hold, no other person who can catch hold of my psyche. I alone am the person who can see the psyche as the psyche. Now, how do I see the psyche as the psyche? By getting free, disentangling myself from the word anger, from the meanings of that word, from all the conditioning of my mind in association with that word, out of my life experience. This is not an easy task. This is extremely difficult. The next question you will immediately ask, well, how do I dissociate myself from the word? it would be a mistake to try compulsively to turn our attention away from the Word and try to see the stuff of the psyche. It can't be done. Seems a hopeless situation, doesn't it? But it isn't really. Look at the Word itself. Look at it very intensely, because that is already there. See it with complete attention. At first there'll be perhaps some sort of turmoil in the mind. And gradually that turmoil will subside by itself. And as that turmoil in the mind subsides with looking at the Word, that Word vanishes out of consciousness. And all its connotations vanish. Remain attentive. And in the remaining attentive, there emerges the consciousness, the awareness of the actual state of the psyche itself. Then one is seeing exactly what is. Instead of seeing the label, and the label being associated with all my conditioning and my own definitions, is a blind, it's a veil put upon the real stuff which I have labeled. Then, for the first time, the mind has minded its own state. You become aware of the mind on its own plane. And that awareness is totally free of all words, of all descriptions, of all thought coverings of any sort whatsoever. Do try and get hold of this. Really see it. Be very patient with yourself. Be kind to yourself. It will emerge by itself. You see, in this state of attentiveness, there has flowered out transcendent awareness. You know why it is transcendent awareness? Because this awareness, which is utterly free of any words, of any thought, of any description, is free of all limitation, therefore. It is not finite. It is not particular. The Word is finite, particular. The Word has no significance at all for me unless it deals with something which is limited. Therefore, something which is born, grows, dies, which belongs to the realm of death, the realm of division, of duality, multiplicity, conflict, misery, sorrow, and all the rest of it. The Word is that. And as long as I'm looking at the Word, I'm confined to the realm of the finite. My consciousness is enclosed, boxed up. But when all those words disappear, this which was a finite event as such, a disturbed state of the psyche, becomes the medium through which my awareness opens up in totality. And then this strange thing happens. The whole psyche is completely healed. you will see this has no relationship to ordinary psychoanalysis or psychological practice of any as the world knows it. No relationship whatever. The psyche is totally and completely healed. And you wake up to the fact that there is no such thing as my mind or my psyche. No such thing. That this which I call my mind is in its reality, in its wholeness, and in its perfection, utterly empty, transparent. It is a universal in its extensiveness too. It is a universal sensitivity which functions through this limited, particular, finite organism. This is the meaning of waking up to the true nature of mind. Now, what I have said is so many words. It's impossible for me to speak anything but words. If I made funny sounds, well, no one would understand anything, not including myself. But one wakes up to this totality and realizes that this totality is functioning through this finite particular organism. And then the consciousness, our awareness of the world in terms of self and not self, this miserable separation between the two vanishes. And there's no conflict, no problem of selfishness, unselfishness, and the whole host of all that rubbish. Any one, I'm going to use this word which all the world uses, sin, is a divine opportunity for complete liberation. Do you see what happens then? I have no problem about not taking sides, and we talked about this some weeks back, you remember. I have no problem about not taking sides with good against bad, with pleasant against unpleasant, and all the rest of it. Why? Because your awareness is so liberated now that it is aware of the totality in its wholeness. Whose side shall I take after that? Whose side can I take after that? Can I take sides with my liver against my heart? Or my brain cells against the cells of my toenails? Impossible. It is one whole, one totality. But you see, for us human beings who are characterized by consciousness in the manner in which we uniquely on this earth are characterized by consciousness, for us the wholeness being realized, we become a source, a positive power, a source which radiates positive power, which makes for wholeness throughout the world, throughout the psychical world. There is no such thing, therefore, as my liberation. No such thing as healing myself. When this which is named myself, the name again, this which is named myself has become truly free and liberated like that. The total world of a psyche feels the impact, the healthful impact, the life-giving radiation of this wholeness, this liberation. You see how it is put in mythological forms. It has been put in mythological forms in the past. When talking about the founders of the great religions, that when they realized God, or realized liberation, or realized enlightenment and so forth, all nature sang for joy and the angels in heaven were delighted and all the rest of it. These are the mythological forms in which this psychological reality has been presented. Let's get back to this central point. The word which limits, which confines. This is what deceives us. It's the word which stands between our awareness and that which is actually present. Let me repeat it. The actual state of my psyche, which I name anger, is not seen by me because I am seeing the name in between, the actual reality and me. This is what actually happens in the mind when one tries to look. And the name, the word, is associated with definitions, with particular conceptions, and all the rest of it. So it is that host which comes up before one, and one does not see the actual state of the psyche. You see, to see the soul in itself is the whole making of the soul, of the mind, psyche. Use any word you like. That is the whole-making power, the ability to see this. And that ability gets liberated, not by trying to push aside the word, because then you're in conflict. Because I am the word producer myself, am I not? The word is not an object which comes in from outside. The word is something which comes up from within my own living being. So I do not push aside the word. I do not fight against the word. But I pay such complete attention to the word that this cloud, the word, this thing of illusion which stands between me and the reality just dissipates, dissolves away. This energy which is locked up as the illusion-making word or sets of words, this energy now becomes transparent, completely pure, no longer a hindrance to understanding. And in this understanding, there is no conflict. There is no for and against. Just let us digress for a moment. See what we do in ordinary life. We have planned out something. And for that particular purpose, next week, so-and-so will do this, so-and-so will do that, so-and-so will do this. They are all key people. And the result will be something very advantageous and profitable to us. Oh. Now one chap goes and falls ill suddenly at the last minute, and he's out of it, and the whole plan goes awry. What are my feelings towards that fellow who fell ill? Compassion? Or a tremendous annoyance? If I use very polite language, I'll say, why on earth did that silly old idiot go and fall ill at the last moment? And I'll say it in that tone of voice. There the cat corroborates. You see, this is what I'll do, won't I? I planned out something in order to gain an objective which was profitable and all the rest of it. And this is my reaction when he fell ill. Now, take another situation. We have planned to go out for a picnic next week. The wife and the children and so forth. And we love all the children in the true sense of the term. Let us assume that. And one of them falls ill. And the picnic has to be postponed. How do I feel towards my little one? You see the difference? There is only compassion, complete willingness to do the needful, to heal the suffering one. And, all right, we'll have a picnic some other time. Perfectly all right. And it really is perfectly all right within one's consciousness. So, in the one case, there is the attitude of pushing out that which disturbs. In the other case, there is no such thing. It is all part of the whole. Now, the same with regard to all our difficulties. Words, thoughts, states of confusion, anger, jealousy, upset, annoyance, whatever they are. After all, I am their progenitor. I am their father. Why do I refuse to see them as my own children? So you see what happens when I do see them as my own children. There is not this cold, calculating, intellectual perception, which is a thing of separation, a thing without love. But there is this indefinable, mysterious, wonderful thing called understanding, which is utterly clear-sighted vision of what actually is, completely interwoven with pure compassion all the time. See, that is why wisdom heals. Just as we say that love heals, wisdom heals, exactly like that. And there is no difference whatsoever between what we name love and what we name wisdom, or what we name goodness or truth or beauty or anything like that in the transcendent realm. If then, when I am being mindful, and I can really resolve this problem of the way in which the world and my conditioning and my conceptions stand in the way. When I can do that, the separating power of the name, the word, disappears altogether out of my life. Altogether. And then the reality of that transcendent condition, which we talk about as love and truth and beauty and so forth, if the reality is there then, and the inhibiting influence of the name is out. So you see what mindfulness really means, what it implies. Do we really know that? Know it with this inward knowing. Just as the hand can actually catch hold of an object and deal with it, so the mind actually, for the first time, minds what it is observing, not letting it be at a distance, with the word interposed in between. This is the real meaning of minding. So the body grasps, the word grasps is a bad word, do remember that, but let me use it for this occasion. Just as the body grasps this, holds it and deals with the object, the mind grasps what it is observing. Its own self, that is. You see? I say, here is my knee, and I can catch hold of mine. If it hurts, I can rub it, massage it. If it feels a bit twisted, I can untwist it with my hands and so forth. But if I were to stop short at words, the pain is in the knee, it is twisted, that there are no words which will untwist it and bring it back. I have to use my body itself, my hands, to do it, haven't I? Now the mind does the same with respect to itself. And when it does that with respect to itself, and it becomes pure and clean, as I've said so many times, this illusion of my mind vanishes, and the one and only mind, the mindfulness of totality, functions through you. This is another meaning, out of several meanings, of omniscience. Then you're the all-knowing one. But that knowing is not in the forms in which we, in the limited way, know what is written in a book or know how to cook a particular dish or anything like that. That is a different kind of knowing. That belongs to its own plane, its own sphere of the limited and the finite. A professional man who is master of certain skills, he knows how to express that skill in physical action. A chemist, a doctor, a dentist, whoever it may be, you see, he knows his skills. They belong to the realm of the finite and the particular. The mind in its wholeness does not belong to the realm of the finite in particular. And it is this infinity which is released in awareness within the individual. So, when you look at the word, look at it lovingly, kindly. And in the looking, that word will cease to constrain you yourself. And when it ceases to constrain you yourself, what remains, in fact it is not a remaining, it is a complete filling up to the ends of the universe. What remains is the totality, the fact. And in this fact is the freedom. Now be very careful. Don't let us fall into the trap of the mind will, the conditioned mind will inevitably do this, into the trap of thinking, all in the garden will be lovely forever and ever again. The serpent's gone out, all the cherubim have it, their flaming swords have left, we are back home forever and ever. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, forever. Nothing of the sort. Life in its totality in this physical world where there are limited finite particulars and phenomena will inevitably and invariably present the usual succession of changing situations. This constitution, I, the ordinary man, being what I am, will react to certain situations and say, this is pain, and to other situations and say, this is pleasure. Because the body is the body. It is structured that way. You cannot avoid the fact of its structure. And according to its structure, it will function. But this wonderful thing, the mind, which is not like a bodily structure, but is utterly free, that can be everlastingly at peace and happy, healthy. And therefore happy. You will find another result out of all this. The ceaseless chatter which characterizes our lives will just naturally stop. You look at a river. It starts high up in the mountains and goes down waterfalls and all the rest of it. And to us, it seems also seems all very lovely and so forth. Let us assume that the chatter in our minds, which goes on incessantly, is also a charming chatter. You see? But when that river has entered the ocean and mingled with the ocean in its totality, in the depths of the ocean, is silence, is peace, is complete fulfillment and perfection, undisturbed. And the heat of the sun from the surface of that ocean will evaporate those waters, may turn them into clouds which will become rain and keep on producing the rivers. So I myself am the producer of it all. Am I going to be annoyed with the rivers for having left the ocean? Am I going to be angry with the surface of the ocean because it has, its surface has been ruffled into such a storm by the winds that, perhaps tidal waves are produced or whatever it may be and so many people are killed? No, it's all part of the wholeness. And if there is the complete vision in the true sense, there is no callousness. There is complete compassion all the time. And in that is the healing of any and every situation. So this chatter will become calm. And if that chatter becomes calm, think of the numberless names that will go out. Oh, that was lovely, that was fine, let's have it again. this was unpleasant, this was awful, I must avoid that. This chap's a nice chap. We'll make friends with him. That chap's an awful fellow. We'll keep away from him. All that disappears. But the key point is what you must get hold of, the name, the word, and how it stands between oneself and the reality of what is. So now, when you practice meditation, which is a 24-hour job, not that specialized, intense meditation which you try to begin at 6 o'clock and finish at 6:30, but in which you find that you are always coming back to the beginning because you never are able to start properly. You see? You will find that the 24-hour meditation, which is the true mindfulness, will be there always. The true mindfulness. Nothing is rejected. You don't refuse to see, to hear, to touch, to taste. This does not mean that one becomes indiscriminate. But the right kind of discrimination is different from the discrimination we exercise because we are moved by our pleasure drive and we are moved against that which causes pain. So there'll be right discrimination present. Then we shall see that this indispensable basis of purity is something which we do not have to struggle for. You will be able to follow the impurity as it arises in consciousness, as it presents itself in the situation. Not indulge in it, not fight against it. You see, but look at it, just look at it, without doing the one or the other. And this disharmonious condition will resolve itself. So what begins as a conditioned mindfulness flowers out into, culminates in, transcendent awareness. And it is not that you or I achieve transcendent awareness. There's no such thing at all. But it is just this, that I, the particular person, this particular organism, living organism, have become so completely unresisting to the reality of life that the totality functions through me unhindered. The totality realizes its own transcendence through the particular and the limited. It is because that is the case that the instinct that people have had for worshipping the founders of their religions, their great spiritual teachers, as incarnate God, is a perfectly correct instinct. The instinct is correct, but the forms in which we ignorant people clothe it, and the manner in which we carry it out, and unfortunately the conflicts we enter into against others who have different forms of the same thing, that is the tragedy of it. But the instinct as such is an instinct which can open your eyes to truth. God is not there or there or anywhere. If we realize that infinity, why it is here, totally. And true mindfulness can do this.